Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Caught offside. With Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught offside just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Beautiful day. That's what's up. Gorgeous. Going to hit 80 today. There's a nice wind. It feels like good summer. Not sweltering New York City. Smell the garbage. Summer. It's nice summer right now. It's also probably fake summer as it's going to get cooler, dramatically cooler, 20 degrees cooler tomorrow. But just for now, oh, it's very, very nice. I'm out wearing my Sligo Rovers 1997-98 jersey, Andrew.
How often will somebody, when you wear that, say, hey, all right, are you almost guaranteed for someone to recognize that, or will weeks go by without anybody knowing what you're wearing?
I know a bar I could walk into, which is owned by Sligo people, and they'd
know. Well, that's
away.
Not fair. Yeah,
that's not someone will ask if I wear it every day. Well, first of all, if you wear a soccer jersey with that material every day, they're going to ask you, why do you smell? That's the first thing. Eventually, someone will ask about a jersey. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yesterday I was out, I was wearing it, and I walked by a guy who was wearing a Westmeath Gaelic football top. And I was like kind of slowing down. I was like, ah.
Your eyes met and you're now, you're engaged now to be married.
But he looked too young and had no clue. So there you go.
Oh, that's not where I thought that was
going. I could have been wearing anything. So yeah, no, it's, it was interesting because I fell down a wormhole after. I was like, is this the 97-98 one? And I went back and I checked. Yeah, it is. And then I remembered a striker who used to play for Sligo Rovers called Marcus Hollows. And I was like, oh, Marcus Hollows. And I did the usual thing. I Googled, where did he go after Rovers? He went to St. Pat's and he kind of retired. Whatever. What's he doing now? He's an Elvis impersonator. That's what he does.
Of course.
Yeah,
the natural progression.
Yes, yes. Lower league footballer to the Elvis impersonator. Yeah. So,
what a show. It's already tremendous. You're not getting this stuff anywhere else, but what a show we have coming up for you. So many eventful things happening over the weekend in the Premier League. We'll talk all about them in North London Derby, Liverpool's title chances, a very weird Cody Gakpo incident. We'll bid adieu to Sheffield United, all kinds of things on the show today. Second half of the pod, Leverkusen stuff, some MLS stuff, and JJ has a special things I saw on the internet, which I've seen some of them, and they are worth your time. One in particular, a story is told by a Premier League legend that I think is interesting, and I'm still not sure how I feel about it.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, I wanted to roll it into our airplane chat with Mayor Pete on Friday's podcast, but I forgot. It would have been perfect to link the two together. But this is an aviation story with a slightly different turn of events.
So, yeah, stay tuned for all that later in the pod as well. But let's get right into it, JJ. Some big things over the weekend in the Premier League as we close in on the end of the season. And this was one of the big ones. This one's been circled on the calendar for quite some time, a late season North London derby with title hopes on the line, with top four hopes on the line, Ange Ball versus Arteta. And it was a weird game.
It was.
I'll say this before we get into the game. I should tell you, I still have not. I'm pretty good about trying to navigate family life with like really important match viewing, like games that it's hard. You understand now you have a child. Like it's a hard thing to get the two to align sometimes. So with this one, I was able to watch, I had to split it into two halves. I watched the first half and then I treated halftime as though it was like some Super Bowl. Like in my head, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to DVR this now. And halftime is just 4 hours long. And then I'll come back and watch the second half. But the thing that I had to leave for, so Arsenal score, and we'll get into the game, but Arsenal score right near the end of the first half, and it's 3-0, and my mood is just, I'm just the worst person in the world to be around in that moment. And you know where I had to go?
No.
Somebody, a parent in Luke's preschool class, did a very nice thing and organized a large-scale play date at their house. They have a beautiful home, an enormous, very large home, beautiful home.
Bigger
very,
than yours?
I mean, JJ, come on.
Yours is salubrious.
Come on. And so I had to take him to this play date with 64-year-olds. It's me and about 15 moms. And I'm just like stewing in a corner in rage over this game that is now turned disastrous for the team I support and that I'm missing. It's just not, I don't know how to do it yet. Trying to navigate the two things. How can I be a good parent and husband while also being a fan and podcaster? I don't know. It's hard. It's just
Were the parents looking at you like, oh, what's wrong with that guy?
Right. They had some food out and I had just like, I was in a corner, just kind of quietly stuffing my face with a scowl while kids are running by around me. But
Jeremy,
we do the best we can.
Let's make sure to not invite the Gundlings again.
We do the best we can to satisfy all masters in life. JJ, this game, kind of a weird one. I mean, like, from open play, I don't know if it was the kind of game where we learned a ton about these teams. I actually didn't think Tottenham were bad, I didn't think Arsenal were overwhelming, even though the 3-0 halftime scoreline may not have told you that. That scoreline to me didn't necessarily feel like an entirely accurate reflection of how the first half went.
But
like also in a grander, larger sense, it was entirely accurate. Like set pieces and counterattacks. If you want to beat Tottenham, be good at those two things and you'll beat Tottenham. So
yes,
maybe it's, you know, even though Tottenham played well and we're trailing 3-0, whatever, like it was also entirely accurate. It was very weird game.
Yeah, there was, I think if the way I look at this game was, if I break it down into pieces, I think that Tottenham were decent in the good in the first half. They were destroyed by set pieces and a quick break, a VAR decision on an offside and a penalty not given. And Arsenal then in the second half were coasting. Coasting to the point where I was nodding off. And then David Raya was like, you know what? I'm going to spice this up. And kicks a ball. Like, just decides, you know what? There's not enough jeopardy in my life. My home life's boring. I'm going to just completely step this game up. And kicks the ball straight to a Tottenham player, Romero. What the hell was he doing there, by the way?
Right?
Ange's press is really all over the place. And he slots home perfectly.
It may as well have been Vicario.
And then the next thing, Tottenham are back in the game with the crowd behind them, with the decent players that they do have. And they made it interesting. And then, of course, Declan Rice intervenes to kick someone in the nutsack, you know, in keeping with that policy of ours to make sure guys check their testicles. Nothing's going to make you check the crown jewels quicker than a boot in them.
Yeah, we should check on poor Ben Davies and see how he's doing today.
Kicks him in the nads, realizes it's a penalty. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got this kind of scary finish to the game. Arsenal finish it out, go to their fans, celebrate. And that was it. And I'm not going to say that Arsenal wouldn't have won the game anyway.
Sure.
But for me, what the game was shaping up to be and what the game turned out to be was wrecked wrecked by this hairline, like microscopic, minuscule, the thing that just irks me so much, goal by Mickey van de Ven, because it's like a bang bang game. Then Arsenal go ahead from the set piece, more of which a little bit later, and then Tottenham, who look good in the open field, break down the field, score this goal. I love the way he finished, Mickey van de Ven, way he finished that goal, just lashed it home, celebrates in front of the fans, points to the crest. There's a whole thing. This is building, this is brewing, but no. We must be right. We must be right. And even in our endeavours to be right, we may also be wrong, because I'm still not sure that he was offside or whatever. And this isn't a, this isn't an Arsenal thing. This isn't a Tottenham thing, a North London derby thing. This is an always thing. We will have semi-automated offside, which is super accurate next year. And I welcome that. But to another extent, this, it still doesn't solve the inherent problem, which is like, the game should not be destroyed in this fashion. And I feel it was destroyed. We were drawing lines. We're waiting. I never wanted a rule that I saw someone come up with on the internet adopted quicker, which is if any of your body part is in line with the defender, then you are onside. We need to have a clear demarcation between those things. And I would challenge Arsenal fans and any fans who watched that game who said, well, look, there's the rules, you know, offside's offside. It's completely objective. It is not subjective. You cannot make up your own rules on this thing. I'm like, okay, I would challenge you that if that goal was, if there was no VAR and that goal's given and all we have is just replays of that goal, you'd be fine. You'd be absolutely fine with it. You wouldn't be complaining, but there it was. It's knocked off. And then something that you can really have a look at, that you can really delve into, is completely ignored, which is the trip by Trossard on Kulusevski, which was not intentional. And it was so not intentional that Kulusevski tries to keep his balance, where if Kulusevski falls to his knees immediately, throws his hands out and shouts, not only might there be a penalty for Tottenham, but there may have been a goal stop for Arsenal.
Well, not may have.
Would have been a goal stop for Arsenal on the breakaway. Now, here's the other side to it. It's a brilliant goal by Saka. It's such a good first touch. Takes it in line. I think Vicario is bad on this.
All right,
goal.
Hold on. Can we do hold one on thing a second? No. You're doing the whole game.
No, I'm not. I'm just excited at that. But it's those moments. It's that bunch of moments that kind of, I think, denies us what could have been a thriller. I'm not saying Arsenal wouldn't have won it again. I think probably would have, because Tottenham can't defend corner kicks. But I feel we were denied something with this. I was irritated, and the game for me, I won't say it died, because I definitely did get interested when I saw Heung-Min Son stepping up to take a penalty, with enough time left for Tottenham to equalize. But I just as a spectacle, I hated what I saw in those few minutes.
So let me try and go through these things one at a time. First, yeah, the offside thing. I mean, look, there are no secrets here. Everyone who's listened to this show even once kind of knows where we fall. I probably am a little bit more in the, it either is or it isn't. And as frustrating as it is, it's just not, it's, offside has become one of those things for me where I don't lose sleep over those. That's just kind of how it is. And I understand your molecular level approach to it. It is frustrating. I kind of wish that, like, we could live in a world where there are no lines. They have 30 seconds to look at it. If you can't tell in 30 seconds, then that means it's close enough where the ruling on the field stands. I would kind of be okay with that. Next year, though, I'll probably be okay with just the automated. No, there's no wait time. It is or it isn't.
Yeah,
I'll be fine with that, too. Okay. So as frustrating as that was, because you think we're right back in it, I don't lose sleep over it. The Kulusevski one, I do lose a little more sleep over, because for a couple reasons. Like, I talk all the time about this sport's approach to diving, because they tell you that they want to weed that out of the game. It's not something we like in this game, but their actions, and when I say they, I mean referees, the Premier League, whoever.
IFAB.
EGMOL. But their actions on the field wind up incentivizing it. Dejan Kulusevski gets clipped by Leandro Trossard. Whether it's accidental or not doesn't matter.
No.
That doesn't matter. Kulusevski tries to do what we deem to be the right thing, which is attempting to stay up.
An honorable man.
Right, but ultimately he can. He does eventually wind up going down, but not in the way that maybe you would on a normal penalty. If he feels the contact from Trossard and just says, F it, and goes down immediately and grabs his ankle or whatever and makes a scene of it, it's my belief that he is awarded that penalty. And yes, you could say, well, VAR is still going to have a look. You're right. And I think it's a situation where once they see there's been any contact by Trossard, it's a situation where whatever the ruling on the field was is what's going to be in this case. And I think if Kulusevski had made a show out of it, he gets the penalty, and that's what they wind up. That's what winds up being called on the field. Mm. So, like, VAR is like these situations. They incentivize diving. Like, this is why diving is part of the game. If he does that there, he gets the call. And now it's either 1-1, we got a brand new game, or bare minimum, I mean, a penalty gets missed by Sun. It's still 1-0. It's not 2-0, which is what it wound up being at when Arsenal went right back downfield and scored.
Right. So just one quick point as well that I've neglected, and I always bring it up, and it's important to bring it up. There is this different set of standards in the Premier League, a different bar for what they're going to give on penalties now as well. And that fell well beneath the threshold of what they're going to call. Now that's a right or wrong kind of question. I think it's wrong. I mean, it's a penalty or it's not a penalty. So that's part of it too. You know, they don't want the kind of, was it? I'm not sure. They want, like, you need to be decapitated. Well, not decapitated, but you need to be. It needs to be clearer for them. So I guess that factors into it too.
Well, that might factor into why they didn't go back and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if Kulusevski had gone down, I think the instinct would have been to give it, and I don't think that it would have been overturned on review. Mm-hmm. But we'll never know. I could be very well be wrong in terms of the game. You know, there are other things to talk about here. So first, with regards to Spurs and Ange, you know, I would say the jury is still out to a certain extent on Ange, and specifically his stubbornness. Like, in some ways we applaud it. Tottenham are going to play this way come hell or high water, and that's it. There's something admirable about that, I suppose. But in other ways, he needs to be careful. So here was Ange on Tottenham's problems defending set pieces versus Arsenal. He said, "If I thought fixing defensive set pieces was the answer to us bridging the gap, then I'd put all my time and effort into that. But that's not where we're at." He's talked about this before. They're not getting a set piece coach. All right. It's split up right now. Mile Jedinak and Ryan Mason handle it. That's part of their duties as assistant coaches. They're not going all in on this thing. And it's killing them. It's killing them. They've conceded 14 goals from set pieces this season. And by the way, I don't know that I'm not sure if that number includes the corner kick goal that knocked them out of the FA Cup against Man City. That might just be in league play. More than a quarter of the goals that Tottenham have conceded this season have occurred off of a set piece. That is an alarming Achilles heel. And it's not a fluke. Their XG allowed on set pieces is third worst in the league. If anything, they've been fortunate. Their goals allowed on set pieces is actually fourth worst in the league. Meanwhile, Arsenal have scored 22 off of set pieces. These are not coincidences. One team is in a title race right now because of this thing, because of the resources they've devoted to it, and the other one has fallen out of the Champions League race because of their refusal to do so. I love Ange, but, like, at a certain point, I understand maybe he doesn't want to call his guys out publicly, whether that's the assistant coaches who are responsible or players who aren't.
Yeah.
I don't know, but there needs to be some acknowledgement that, yes, this is a huge problem for us, and it has undermined our season.
I couldn't agree with you more. And you know what Arsenal are going to do. They're experts at it. They're physically strong. They come in. I mean, Vicario got bullied. Take that first principle first. Vicario, you know he's no good under the high ball. Arsenal know he's not good under corners, in swingers. So what do Arsenal do? They put Ben White in to mess with him.
Yeah.
You've got enough strong, robust characters in that Tottenham team to go in and mess with Ben White. Don't let it happen. If it takes a melee or if it takes a referee to disrupt what Arsenal are doing there by you sending someone to stand right in front of Vicario so Ben White can't do what he's doing, then you do it. But the passive approach doesn't work. The other thing is, Andrew, zonal marking on corners. Look, I know I'm going to get a flood of people, because I always do, even from the very start of this podcast, who tell you the stats show zonal marking. Forget that for Arsenal. Just let's deal with this game. You can't not zonal mark. You can't zonal mark against Arsenal. You have to know where their guys are. You have to go man for man with them. It was too easy. Far too easy. You need to get goal side, touch tight. I'm talking old school basics. Because these were Sunday league goals. These were things that, like, the kind of stuff that you'd hear before a game of Sunday. The keeper doesn't look that tall. On corner kick, swing it in under the crossbar. Let's have someone in under the keeper. Like, this is basic stuff. And Ange's kind of reluctance or his stubbornness with this, like, just flies in the face of every other team that makes set pieces a cornerstone of what they
priority.
Do. A priority. If you can fix a team, if you need to come in and fix a team, you can start there with set pieces. And that Ange won't do that. It falls under what we're going to file away from this season about him is, well, it's who we are, mate. Like this constant kind of dogmatic. He can't not know that this is a problem. Now, there is another way with Ange that I think we need to kind of acknowledge. You see what he's like when they lose. He's just the grumpiest man on earth. I mean, you made a big deal about Klopp being a bad loser. Ange is a bad loser in his own way. He's a pure grump. And what I would tend to believe is that he will address this, that this will take a priority or be one of the top three things he looks at during the summer. And that he's just not letting the media have their way. It's like when someone
you're right. I think I agree with that.
I think that's got to be it, because otherwise he's a fool. And we know he's not a fool.
He's not a fool.
No.
He's not a fool. A couple other things I wanted to talk about with this game. Kai Havertz. So I still don't always know
if he's like good.
What he's best suited for or what his ideal role should be. Although
he knows. Did you see what he tweeted?
No, actually, I didn't.
Oh, so he tweeted out, you know that video? I don't know who the original person coming on stage was. Was it Post Malone or someone? And they're just coming out there. It's a total vibe, and it tracks them coming up backstage, down a ramp, and the crowd is everywhere. And so everyone's been, like, superimposing.
Oh, other... no, it's not Post Malone.
Who is it?
Oh, man, I forget. Keep talking. Keep going.
You look it up. Yeah. So it's someone vibing coming out, and everyone's been replacing, been superimposing someone else on it. Like, there was one, someone posted, here's Michael Oliver coming towards a North London Derby game when he knows he can screw Spurs. And he's just dancing, coming out the stage, pure vibes. So Havertz tweeted this off himself. Of himself. We talk about Serginho Dest hype videos. This is a lot of self-praise, my friend. So Havertz tweets himself going out the thing. So he's very aware of the form he's in, Andrew. Well,
sure.
I'd say if this was November, he's certainly not tweeting that out.
Well, no. And
who was it, by the way?
I haven't found it yet. And it's
all right. I got to find this. Because
it's a rapper. I don't remember who. Yeah. I should know. We'll find it. And by the way, everybody listening is probably screaming at their phones or radios.
We're so old now. But oh, little Yachty.
Yes, little Yachty. But
little Yachty.
Good Lord in heaven.
God, what is he? Oh my God. Oh my God. I've made him Israeli. Little Yachty. No, I'm sorry. Jeez. little Yachty. Little Yacht? Little Yachty. He's a yacht. All right.
But in terms of as far as what his role is, I am moving closer to like where Arsenal had him in the beginning of the year, where he was like kind of out on like left wing midfield kind of roaming. I would say I'm moving closer to thinking a number nine that specializes in holding up play, getting wingers like Saka, Trossard, Martinelli involved. I'm moving closer to thinking that's it. But it's still not entirely known, but this guy, and through him and the assistance of his manager, I mean, Arteta has used him and found ways. He has found a way to leave a significant positive imprint on what could turn out to be a title-winning season, proving a lot of us, Arsenal fans included, wrong about having signed him, because Arsenal fans were not thrilled when that signing happened for that price tag. In this game alone, his ball to Saka, I mean, we can talk about if there was a penalty in the build-up or not, whatever. You play through the whistle, you keep going. His ball to Saka on that second goal was perfect. just perfect. And then he does later on in the first half, he does what he does. He rises up, header on the corner kick. It was huge. It felt like it put the game away. A goal and an assist in a North London derby with a title hanging in the balance. That's big time. That's big time from a guy who a lot of people out there weren't sure that he had it in him. That's a huge performance. After he started slow to the season, something has clicked. Something has clicked. Since February 17th, so 11 Premier League matches, he's got 8 goals and 5 assists. As the games have become more meaningful, he's gotten better and better. He's still 24. Like, it's not unreasonable to think that he's kind of still discovering his game and what his best attributes are. Yeah. I don't, like, let me ask you this, JJ. Is he destined for like an Olivier Giroud career? Like, Giroud never really sniffed 20 goals in the Premier League, but no one ever felt like he was a disappointment as a striker. Like, maybe what Arsenal need, we keep talking, they need a goal scorer. They need a goal scorer. Maybe what they need isn't necessarily a better true number nine. Maybe it's an upgrade over that Trossard Martinelli position on the left for Havertz to bring that player into the attack like he does with Saka on the right. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. Because sometimes I see him and I think, man, you are deeply average. You know, I don't know what you're great at. I don't think you're technically amazing. You're not some kind of brute athlete. You're not super quick. I don't know, but the numbers don't lie. His impact on the team at this point in the season has been very, very important. Maybe you're right. Maybe that's what he does there, because Trossard is, it looks like, will never be a guaranteed starter for them. Martinelli, who I really liked at the start, sure, I'm not sure of either. So yeah, maybe ultimately that is his role. But this was a good day for Arsenal.
It was. One other player I wanted to mention coming out of this one, Son for Tottenham. Now, look, he converted a penalty late in the game that was big. Pressure on his shoulders, bring Tottenham back into the game. Big finish. Here we go. Like, that was important. Mm. But this guy, to me, when I watch him over the last few, this guy just looks spent. He just looked like he had no impact in that game up until converting that penalty.
But look at his season, Andrew. He's got how many games would you think between international and everything he's played?
So that's exactly right. He has had to bear the weight of so much this season. Yeah. Kane is gone. He's the face of this team now. He's the captain. He also plays that role for South Korea, where they had a very trying Asian Cup midseason, which featured a deep run without them really playing well, and reports of an intra-squad scuffle over a ping pong match. Like, yeah. I just look at him. He's at the center of all this. I just look at that guy and I just think he needs a break. And it's showing in his performances. And I'm not saying, because I saw this circulating on Spurs Twitter a little bit about maybe they've chosen the wrong captain. And I've seen it circulating that Christian Romero might be better suited to be the captain. And by the way, I don't think people would be saying that after one of his, and I love Romero, I think he's great, but after one of his like madness challenges that cost Tottenham a game and then like three more after it through suspension, are people going to be saying that guy should be captain? Son's the right captain. I got no problem with it. I just think right now it's the end of April and that guy's just done. And that's tough because he's a warrior and he wants to finish out the season and I'm sure he thinks he can do it, but he's cooked. And if it's up to Ange to have to take it out of Son's hands and start, you know, I mean, they have a problem now because Timo Werner had to leave with an injury, so maybe they don't have a choice. But like, they might have options where they could play Richarlison, Werner, and Brennan Johnson. You know, Son could sit, but they're not doing that. He's the captain, so I don't know. But I just say from watching this guy and the impact that he's had of late, I just think he just looks wiped to me.
Yeah, he does look wiped. I think as well the style of play. It's another one of those. If you're picking styles of play that tire and exhaust, Guardiola, yes. Although Guardiola, Klopp,
and this.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Poch, I think similar. You know, the Poch is high pressing.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah.
That used to happen to all his Tottenham teams as well late in the year. But I think you're seeing some of that right now. Certainly.
And again, you know, I think Arsenal will be looking. Tottenham will be looking for another forward to accompany Son, and that the weight and is shared more, and I think that'll happen in the summer.
You have been adamant that there is no longer a title race, so I will ask you this, I'll pose it this way: what has a greater chance of occurring, Tottenham finishing fourth or Arsenal finishing first? Spurs are 7 points back of Villa with 2 games at hand.
I fancy
Arsenal up a point on City, having played one more game.
Right. I fancy I fancy Villa to finish out fourth.
There's a better chance of Arsenal winning the league.
Yeah, there is a better chance of Arsenal.
That is the correct answer. Yeah. And it's not close. And it's not close. Arsenal, yeah. I mean, they are in this thing. Like, they are in this.
Very much so. Very much so. The we will get to the other part of this equation, the one that just, because I'm a veteran of this, I've been here several times. I've been in these moments in these games, and we'll talk about that when we get to City. Why I'm just,
I understand,
convinced it's only going one way. And boy, am I rooting for Arsenal.
Well,
I'm rooting for Arsenal and City to somehow implode and play Liverpool back into it, but I don't see that happening.
That is where we diverge.
The implosion is happening somewhere else.
That is where you and I diverge. Let's go to Liverpool, JJ. You mentioned the implosion happening somewhere else. It was happening at the London Stadium. Mm. Liverpool, they settle for a draw against West Ham. That's not enough. Now looks like their race has been run. So the game was interesting. It was a very entertaining game, but there's a couple marquee incidents that I think we should kind of lead with here.
Okay.
Salah, Klopp. What do you make of this?
Well, I've seen a fresh angle of the incident, Andrew. Not good. Not good.
Are you so familiar with like the John Boy videos?
Some of them.
So they do a great job, but like they kind of, one of their specialties at John Boy is in baseball. Like they do like kind of when there's an argument between an umpire and a manager, like they do great lip reading videos.
Right.
They break it down. Like you literally can now know what is, I think soccer, either John Boy needs to get into the soccer business or somebody needs to fill that void. I think that there are enough of these where I think maybe we can do it. There's so many different languages spoken. It makes it more difficult.
Also, we all had an awful, awful time about a decade ago, more than a decade ago, trying to lip read a England captain racially abusing someone and to find out what exactly was said. And it stained the lip reading process for all of us.
Kind of happened with the Zidane Materazzi incident too, didn't it?
Yeah. I did we ever really get to the bottom of that? Don't think we ever did.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember what the rumor was. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Uncomfortable waters. Uncomfortable waters. So I looked at when I saw it in real time, I was like, oh, that's bad. That looks really bad. And it looks like Sal is absolutely raging that he's not starting the game, raging that Klopp gives him instruction just as West Ham equalize, which was a great header by, who was it? Mikel Antonio from a Jared Bowen cross. And it looks as if he's upset that he has to take instruction from the guy who's dropped him for this game. He looks angry. And then I see the other side of it. So there's an angle from the crowd. Someone, of course, has their camera phone out to record a substitution. I guess if you're that low down in the bowl and you're this close to these mega hero people, you want to take lots of videos. But anyway, he captures the video. Klopp has his hand out to Salah to, you know, do the slap before he goes into the game. And Salah deliberately walks around like the fourth official to kind of avoid him. I think Klopp puts his hand out again. Salah gives it a very meek and very kind of scornful clap or whatever. Klopp clearly says, what's your problem, or something of that nature, or what's wrong, or and Salah just fires back at him. Salah then, that behavior is bad enough. Salah's behavior then in the mix zone afterwards, where he's walking through and the journalists ask him, Mo, will you stop to talk? And he goes, if I stop and talk, there will surely be fire. Shut up. Honestly. You know, football is very much what have you done for me lately. You are probably the best signing Liverpool have made in 40 years, something like that. Up there anyway. Mm-hmm. But you lose privileges when you've been wank for a month, missed as many chances as you've had in crucial games against hated rivals. You've put a tantrum on the line in front of toward a legendary manager that's leaving, and then you say something like that in the mix zone. That's not on. That's not okay. Someone responded to me saying, don't love this from Salah, with your typical D-bag Twitter response. Oh, a multimillionaire not getting what he wants is upset. Shock. Like, shut up. like the idea, it's just because he's a multimillionaire doesn't mean he can't control his emotions or he can't keep stuff in house. It's disappointing stuff, especially when Klopp came out in the post match and said, "I'm not going to discuss what's been said, but it's been sorted." And then for him to do his whole fire and fury little speech as he's walking down the tunnel, not good.
Is this a you can tell me if I'm tell me if I'm reaching here. I could be, but like Klopp's decision to announce his retirement during the season, or not retirement, just exit from the club. It had a positive byproduct in some ways, like maybe it extracted a little more emotion from the team, a little more desire, like stuff like that. That's hard to quantify. Maybe it got a little bit more out of them than what they normally would have. But is there also a negative byproduct?
Yeah.
With stuff like this, like, do you think Salah's doing that to Klopp if he knows Klopp is the manager of this team post May 20th?
I think he still is doing that. It's okay. Salah's shown petulance before. We've seen him take, what was it, last season when he was substituted on like the hour he took, or was earlier in this season where he took like 45 minutes to take off white tape off his hands and to make sure that his disgust was noted. I think it happens anyway. I think the general palsy that the club is under has not been helped by the manager, by the club. It's because it wasn't just the manager. The manager and the club's idea of announcing him leaving. Now, I understand why they had to do it, but you can't say it wouldn't be part of it. Like, the emotion of that. And Gary Neville says that this has been a team that's, you know, not being ready for a title challenge anyway, and it has looked like kind of exhausted the last few weeks. Gary Neville said this: "You watch them all every week, and Arsenal were at a really high level, and City were getting to a really high level. Liverpool were just hanging on in there. I feel like it's just gone over the edge. It's just been too much for them. The talk of emotion helping you and the Jurgen Klopp farewell, that works, but you have to get near the end for that. They just haven't been good enough. I think with Liverpool, it's not a case of their mentality or anything like that. I think they've just gone as far as they possibly can and they're just drained." I agree with parts of that.
Maybe Klopp just jumped the gun. Like, maybe announcing it midseason was right, but maybe he just did it like 2 months too soon.
Could Liverpool have started a process without telling the players, in conjunction with the manager, to have a manager to come in and keep it all secret and all under wraps? Just, I don't think it would have been possible.
Yeah.
So,
now with the Salah thing, like, you're watching this play out. We've heard the Saudi rumors. It's hard not to think that his days are numbered at Liverpool. But then this morning, reports run to the contrary of that. This is from David Ornstein in The Athletic. "Liverpool fully expect Mohamed Salah to stay this summer and are planning on the basis of him being a part of their squad for next season. Salah has given no indication of wanting to exit, which marries with Liverpool's desire, and it is anticipated he will remain at Anfield. The Egypt international has continued to be linked with a move to Saudi Arabia after Al Ittihad's pursuit last summer, but the view in the Saudi Pro League in their hierarchy is that Salah wishes to spend another campaign with Liverpool." This is probably a conversation for the summer, but will Liverpool fans be excited by this news or unsure of it? Because if you sell him now, he's 31 with a year remaining on his deal. So, like, maybe you might get £100 million.
You might not, though.
If you sell him now? I mean, well, the 75 to 100, somewhere around 75 with like 50 in incentives. I don't know.
That's assuming that the Saudi league is still willing to spend the money that they have been doing. I mean,
I think on him,
because he would be such a massive player in the Muslim world. But the other side to that is that that league is, I won't say it's struggling, because it can't struggle. There's too much cash, but it's struggling from perception wise. The crowds are terrible. No one cares. The football is dire, and that big burst of players going there. I mean, there'll always be people who want to go get the bag, and they'll still keep going there. But I wonder if it's as appealing to Salah as maybe people think. Oh, you're gonna. He's all. I mean, he doesn't stop being the biggest star in the Arab world if he plays in the Premier League,
especially for one more season, and then he leaves on a free transfer.
Exactly. So I think there's a chance that But the Saudis and Mo Salah are happy just to wait on this.
The one thing that's interesting, though, with Salah is, like, I feel like because this late season swoon with him and this latest incident with Klopp, it has kind of covered up the fact that he has still been pretty good this year.
He has. So, someone did a supercut, Andrew, of emotional music of Salah taking, like, the aforementioned taking his hand wrapping off, and then the suggestion, I think the line was, blame me. And then it shows Salah just assisting Darwin Nunez endlessly, and Nunez missing. And then Salah assisting a bunch of other players, including Diaz, and then missing endlessly. So there's like...
And even with that, though, so like if you... He missed games this year. He hasn't played the number of games that he has in the past. So in the end, his total figures might not be where they usually are. Although depending on what happens in the last few here, they could be still. But his per 90 numbers, so his goals per 90 is 0.68. That's the third best during his 7 years with the club. His 0.36 assists per 90 is second best during his 7 years with the club. And that's with what you just said. Lord knows how many more he could have had it not been for other guys around him missing chances. So he's still very productive, not kind of productive.
I think the severity of that injury at the African Cup of Nations, he hasn't been the same since he's come back. So what, like, how bad is that injury? Like, is he even fully fit? Like, I reckon when you get to 30, if you're a top level athlete like that, you're probably never 100% fit. But, you know, getting a hamstring injury at that age is just, it's very hard to come back from that. And he looks slower. Like, he looks more kind of encumbered since he came back. He probably needs a summer.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's aware of that. And hopefully whatever fire he was talking about has calmed down a bit.
This Liverpool documentary that's being talked about, almost like a last dance. Kind of, I was going to ask you if, like, are you excited for this, or will it bring you only sadness to watch this? Like, I'm curious.
As long as it's not the state-run wank that is the City documentary. I got through one episode and I'm like, this is just a season in review with little bits of Guardiola interspersed. Like, it's City Forever I speak of on Netflix. It's crap. There's just no insight. And if the Liverpool one is going to be like that, if it's not independent, if they censor what they show, then I'm not looking forward to it.
Well, stuff like that, like how can you not show this?
Well,
like,
being Liverpool was embarrassing for many reasons, but being Liverpool did show us some absolute gems.
Sure.
Like some really funny stuff. And
a lot of high ranking unintentional comedy, I think.
Right. But there was the Steady incident with Sterling. I heard you. You say Steady one more time and I'll send you home. Like Brendan Rodgers. Like that was, we saw a row on the training field. I want warts and all, the whole thing. I don't want it edited. I don't want terrible graphics. I want just let the camera run. Werner Herzog needs to do this. That's who needs to do it.
So the other incident from this game that needed to be discussed, I've seen one quite, I mean, we kind of have. It sort of just happened in one way with Gabriel versus Bayern Munich, but the Areola Gakpo incident.
God. Yeah, I mean, Anthony Taylor's just messed it up and he's got himself out of prison by making up an injury that Areola didn't have. He was fine. He was adjusting his socks. I really wish Gakpo just kicked it into the net and just kicked it in, and then it would have really forced
him. Yeah, then it's like, all right, figure it out now.
Yeah, figure it out
now.
What
are you going to do?
So just because a couple of people did say, well, what's that difference between that and Gabriel and Bayern Munich? Gabriel versus Bayern Munich was like, it's no advantage to Arsenal. There was no Bayern Munich player even, there was nobody pressing. There was nobody running up about to kick the ball. It seemed like an administrative error. You know, like, oh, you didn't attach your TPS report. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. It was just like a formal kind of thing. Whereas this felt like, well, the ball is actually active and there's a guy running for it. And it's a mix-up between the perception of what the goalkeeper thinks is happening and the referee has the power, because the referee's just waved play on. He's not indicated anything other than that ball is live when Areola throws it down.
But he could say upon further review, something is not right and this guy does deserve a chance to be tended to if that's what's necessary.
Ariola's made a mistake, and then Taylor's like, oh no, do I want to allow a goal for this? Well, probably not. This will be very controversial. Okay, I'm going to pretend he needs the physio, you know, because he has a quick word with him there. It's covering himself. It doesn't look good, but, and I'll say this again, this is not the thing I'm annoyed about. I'm way more annoyed about Lucas Paqueta's tackle in the first half, which is a straight red. Every day of the week, I haven't seen anyone argue any different, because how could you? It's a straight red. He should have been off. And I'm much more upset with Liverpool when they get the equalizer, the chances that they missed. Again, this season, the end of season DVD, we should punish ourselves. We should self-flagellate. It shouldn't be any goals or any wins. It should be all the misses, the open goal misses, the chance, the McAllister chance, the header. Liverpool had enough chances to win this game. They left West Ham in it. West Ham scored a very, very good goal, 2-2. Liverpool got what they deserved. As much as the Anthony Taylor letting Ariola off the hook irks me, it's not the reason that Liverpool aren't leaving the London Stadium with 3 points and a glimpse of a title chance. It's not.
Yeah, and it looks like it's all but finished now for them from a title.
Oh, yeah, and another thing, taking Luis Diaz off just made no sense to me. He was having a good game. He was beating players. He was creating chances. Why are you taking him off? Because you have to put Nunes on? Because you have to play Salah? Nonsense. He should have stayed on.
They believed he was fatigued. And look at the resources they have on the bench.
But sometimes you just got to ride the hot hand and just keep going. And you're scrambling on for dear life. There'll be time to rest him. You could be resting him for the last game of the season. He might not be needed. It may all be sewn up. Another thing happened in the middle of the game. So Roisin's in her little kind of play center, one of those things that helped them stand and learn to stand. And she's turning around, smiling at Dada, looking at the TV, smiling at Dada, playing. And after the goal goes in, Mikel Antonio's equalizer, she starts clapping. Her first claps ever. She clapped all weekend after that. Clapping is her new thing now. She loves it.
That and blowing bubbles.
If she starts blowing bubbles, we're in trouble.
That's next. Yeah.
And her nieces are all West Ham fans.
I know.
Her cousins are all West Ham fans. My nieces. Yeah. Not good.
No. Interesting. Interesting development. Yeah. And it was all further impacted, of course, by Manchester City holding up their end. They defeat Nottingham Forest 2-0.
Do me a favor.
I mean, no surprises here.
No.
Like, well, that's almost the part of this that is annoying to me, where people are like, oh, this is all so predictable. Well, yeah, like, Manchester City are always going to beat Nottingham Forest. Like, this shouldn't change anyone's mind about, like, wait until City has some difficult games left. We can have a conversation after those about the predictability. But, like, why is anyone after them beating Forest like, oh, figures, City just win again? Yeah, they're always going to win this game.
Like, yeah, I always felt they were winning it. And now, listen, if Chris Wood, like, Forest had enough chances. Forest had probably more chances than City throughout the game to win it, but they didn't. If Chris Wood on another day had converted some of those chances, maybe we're talking about something different, but it never, like, going into the game. So this is the part of the season where Manchester City fans work the hardest. They work so hard to talk themselves into believing that they're not favorites and something may befall them. Now, for some City fans who are older, who remember Division 2 relegation battles, City always finding a way to go down, the clash against Liverpool where somebody in the stands has told them on the field they don't need to score again, they're going to stay up, 1996, and then Niall Quinn, who's been substituted, runs from the dressing room and is like, no, that's wrong, we need to try and score again, and it's too late. And so there's all this in the older City fans' mind, but most of the City fans who listen to our podcast, they're not older, they support Man City exactly around the same time that they became prominent.
Sure.
So they don't remember any of this, but they work so bloody hard to kind of buy into this narrative. You just never know with us. No, you do. You really do. Most of the time, you do. Throw in the odd Leon or Monaco there, but most of the time, you absolutely know what's happening. I saw this online exchange. Ariel Castillo is like their USA, Manchester City's USA-based content manager person, media person, very nice person. But like, she starts it off here. And I just did a Lucille Bluth eye rolled all this. So she goes, definitely nervous about this one. She's retweeting a Blue Tone, who's just some Man City fan. Very tough game today. Have earmarked this one for a while. It's been one of the trickiest games left. Forest fighting. We'll take patience. But blah, blah, blah. And then a huge game. We'll be... but what happens in the NDL game? Yeah, really nervy morning over here. Blah, 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 blah. Like, stop. Nonsense. Total and utter nonsense.
Yeah,
they had Erling Haaland to spring off the bench to score.
If we're talking about the nervy games that City have left, I don't know that this is the one that I would have circled. Boy, you mentioned Haaland. The whiplash of the way he is covered, it's tough. We talk about the week-to-week referendum on Ange Ball. The same thing is true of the way Haaland is covered in the sport.
Well, Roy Keane's upgraded him to championship level, I believe.
Wow, he's been promoted.
What a finish that is, though. Like, with his quick feet and slots at home. You can talk about his link-up play. You can talk about, like, would he be able to do 70 keepy-uppies? You know, would he be able to do around the world? You know, is there, you know those guys, those street ballers who go to events and they're, like, able to juggle? They're, like, able to file their taxes while they're hopping a ball on their shoulder?
Right, like Haaland may not be a Harlem Globetrotter. All right, fine.
Fine, but, like, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, he comes out. Look at his numbers.
He's got 32 goals and 6 assists in 38 appearances across the FA Cup, Champions League, and Premier League.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, come on. Like, he's great.
It's a super
finish. We don't need to seek out controversy here. Let's move on to something else.
Exactly. He doesn't even give Sells a chance to set himself. He hits it early and perfectly right into the corner. It is too much. But it's kind of society we've created, the footballing media society we've created, where it's just people just want to say something's not actually what it is. You know, it's fun to do that.
Well, I think it makes people feel smart. Like, everyone thinks one thing, and that may be true, but I'm going to find the argument to show you why you should think differently.
Well, like, actually.
I mean, come on. Like,
Haaland is
a goal machine.
Is it? Yeah. And again, like, is there systems? Like, did the Borussia Dortmund system suit him better than City? Probably. The ball's going to go earlier to him and he's racing away with acres behind. Yeah, we can make that argument, sure. But, like, City are still going to work the ball to him in areas where he'll score, and invariably he does score.
System or not, it's going all right for him. Now, part of that system and part of the reason why it's going all right for him is Kevin De Bruyne. He's leading the Premier League in assists despite missing half the season.
I know.
He has 15 assists in 19 appearances.
Sam Lee of The Athletic was talking in terms of him going and leaving City at the end of the season.
Well, he's another Saudi target.
As much as he's covered his head with hair, he would not do well. Even at nighttime, he would not do well in the desert. Also,
from like a sunburn perspective? Okay.
Also, I just don't feel that's his vibe. I think, can I just throw this out here? I think De Bruyne is a football man, like a real football man.
He seems pretty no nonsense.
Right. I think he values stuff. And I think he realizes, all right, I'll go make 60 million more on top of the 100 million I've probably already accrued in my career through everything. I think he would see that as footballing heresy to take yourself out of the, as long as you can play at a proper level, you should do so. I honestly think, and he'll probably look at his performances like, why would I do this?
So that's the thing, is like, we're going to find out. We still don't know the nature of City's financial situation. We're going to find that out sometime soon. There was a comment on that this past week where it looks like soon enough, we're going to know what's going on here. And maybe that changes the way of thinking with regards to him and selling or whatever. But like, if they're financially compliant, and they're not in desperate need of funds, then you can't let this guy go. And that remains the case until he decides he wants to go. As long as he wants to be a member of this club, he's a Manchester City player. He stays. That's my feeling on De Bruyne. If he wants to go, it's another story. Maybe you honor his time with the club and you grant him his wishes. But City should not be the ones looking to capitalize on De Bruyne's worth.
I'd also ask, where does he go? Like, does he do a mad thing? Like a totally mad thing where he's like, I was a boyhood Liverpool fan. I'm going to now just live my boyhood dream. I'm going to join Arnie's revolution. I'm joining Liverpool. I'm going to be a slot man.
I mean, I don't envision that happening.
I don't think City would allow it. So
no, of course not. Let's see a couple other things from the weekend. Everton, they secure their Premier League survival. Congrats to them.
With the most Everton goal you can think of. Ball goes into the box, lashed around a bit, breaks. Gay has a shot, deflected, ends up on the edge of the box or inside the box, rolling to him again, and he smashes it home.
Yeah.
Peak Everton.
18 shots, one on target. That was all they needed. Now, the,
18
it's a
shots
little,
is good, though.
That's
I mean,
right.
I don't know what the value of those shots would be. I would say not high.
Well, here's the thing. It's a little bit... You can't just go by shots. Like, they do threaten. They nearly scored in the first 6 minutes. Decore scuffed one that wound up going like 30 yards off goal, but like it should have been a goal if he could have managed to get it on net. So like that's kind of what they've been, I think, at points in this season. But props to them. Also, JJ, we were talking, I think, just a couple weeks ago about guys who have this like the cleanest strike of a ball. Like I said, Çalhanoğlu. Did we say Dwight McNeil?
Well, we definitely didn't.
I think he belongs on that list.
He can hit one.
He belongs on that list.
Okay.
Oh my God, he smashed the underside of the crossbar from well outside the 18. He just strikes a ball so sweetly. This is good for Everton. They survive for now. I mean, I guess there's still an appeal going on here, but I assume
there's much rattling away in the background for them. That's not like. It's like the ownership situation, 777.
Why has that not gone through yet? Like the ownership changeover has not gone through. I still don't know what this club's future looks like. This weekend was a good weekend, but their future, I don't want to rain on the goodness of this weekend, but I don't know what happens next for them. They have some talented young pieces, but are those players, how long are they going to be okay staying at that club? They have a manager in Dyche who's, He's good enough to keep them in the Premier League. I think we can see that. Maybe even get them to overachieve a little bit. But like it feels like there may also be kind of a low ceiling as to how high they can go with him. I don't know. There's a lot of questions there. But I guess in the immediacy, the most important question of will they remain in the Premier League, at least that's been answered. And that's the most important one. But I still don't know what the next year, 2 years, 3 years looks like for them.
No, and I think, I mean, a lot of fans believe Everton fans, if they can get out of the 777 deal, that they should do it and find someone else. But I mean, 777, I believe, have given them another loan.
Yeah, I think their loans have now gone up over £200 million.
But I mean, if you look at the reporting by a bunch of publications on what 77 are, Everton don't really want this. They need an owner, but do they want an owner that's going to plunge them into another decade plus of insecurity, of worry? I don't think they're it. And I think a lot of Everton fans agree with that. So, hey, listen, like today, Andrew, get out, wear your Everton jersey while the sun shines. But it's, I don't know, it's future is... The future's not guaranteed.
It's unclear.
It's very unclear.
Unclear. Let's see. Future got a little bit brighter for Aston Villa. Now, they did throw away a two-goal lead in this game against Chelsea, but that point combined with Tottenham losing, starting to feel like next year's Champions League is, it's not locked down yet, but it's pretty close, especially with Tottenham still having to go to Stamford Bridge, to Anfield, and host Man City. I don't see this getting turned around.
No, I don't see it either. And Emery's committed himself further to the cause.
Boy, with Chelsea, like that first Villa goal, the Cucurella own goal, it's amazing just how easily that defense can sometimes be cut open. I mean, it's just like one pass from Pau Torres and it's just like everything is now clear. And then the second goal, it's like, it's just a goal kick pretty much. I think it was a free kick, but it was basically a goal kick from Emi Martinez and it's just, like, and they're away. There's no real buildup. Like, it's just, I don't know if Chelsea are caught napping.
They're so soft.
The ball like bounced around a little bit and it falls to Morgan Rogers and he finishes well. But it's just like amazing how quickly they were in an attacking position off a goal kick. Chelsea are, they're still weird. Question for you. Peripheral. So Morgan Rogers scores. I don't know that I've seen this officially stated, but it looked like he did the Cole Palmer goal celebration. How do we feel about players mocking other players' celebration, because I'm starting to feel like this is kind of played. I'm kind of it's not really like, okay, you want to do the James Madison dart, you want to do Cole Palmer's thing. Like, is this still cool? Is it even original anymore to be just like mocking other guys' celebrations? Do your own thing.
By the way, I got some mocking. I got some big, big mocking in our next half of the podcast.
It's, oh, okay.
I can barely speak the words. It's so bad.
All right.
Mocking celebrations. This is next level stuff. From Inter celebrations from their championship. I'll leave it at that. But no, it is played. But I didn't like when Mope did it either. And right. It was funny, Madison said Mope didn't score enough to be doing my celebration, which is like perfect. I don't love it. It's like,
I think it's played. Yeah. Boy, it figures with Chelsea. So Nicholas Jackson finally has a great finish on goal, but only for VAR to go back and rule him offside. It just felt like such a Nicholas Jackson moment.
Chelsea just need this season to get to be over.
Yeah, I think so.
So quickly.
Now, on the positive side, I mean, look, they did come back from two down and nearly won it. Madueke's goal, such a potch goal. Counter-pressing leads directly to a goal. That's what you get with this kind of style and system. And Chelsea, I mean, they should have won it. And I don't even mean the goal that was chalked off for the foul. Right before that, before the corner kick, Cole Palmer does all the hard work, like two great moves, and all of a sudden he's in on Robin Olsen, and he just doesn't finish. I mean, it's a goal. It's a goal that I feel like I've seen Palmer score a number of times, and that one he didn't finish. And then the goal that Chelsea then scored right after that, I thought it was rightfully disallowed. I thought the push was pretty obvious from Badiashile. Now after the game, boy, I don't know if this was in direct response to that. I haven't read up enough on. Why these scenes played out, but some of Chelsea's players, I mean, they lost it on the referee at full time. And I don't know, man, like you start to piece some things together. Like you watch those scenes where like Jesus Perez, Poch's number one assistant, he's got to run out there and start separating players from going at the referee. Like the stuff on the penalty spot with Cole Palmer from a couple weeks ago, the more you see, it's just like, boy, it feels like Poch has his hands full, is sometimes how I feel. That's the youngest team in the Premier League. And there are moments when I watch them and I think, yeah, that's definitely the youngest team. Like you can see it. There's it feels like there's an immaturity sometimes with that team that could definitely improve. But in the here and now, that feels like a tough job.
And it's just going to get thrown at you. If you've shown as much fight during the game, like if you were as tough during the game as you were with the referee afterwards, They need the summer. They need to just start afresh, man.
Yeah. But are these things, like stuff like that, is that, so Thiago Silva announced he's leaving Chelsea. He was emotional about it.
And he had a heck of a line. Let me pull it up. I have it here on my phone. This is definitely going to end up on an inspirational Instagram post in years to come. Oh yeah. He's tearing up and he says, "Goodbyes are for those that leave and don't come back." Oh,
well, yeah. But his point was he's not saying goodbye because he wants to be a part of Chelsea's future, whether that's, I don't know, coaching, boardroom, backroom, I don't know, sporting director. I mean, he's a really bright guy. We've talked before. His story as a player is incredible. What did he have, tuberculosis when he was playing in Russia?
Yeah.
I mean, he nearly died. It's an amazing story. And I know, you know, his teammates, he's a revered figure. It probably is time. I think we've kind of said that for a while now. But from a leadership standpoint, a team that looks like they're in need of some, I don't know if that helps. You know, Conor Gallagher, the team's captain, all kinds of rumors about what the future looks like for him. If it's not at Chelsea, again, don't know if that helps. So there's, again, a team that I do think there's definitely better days ahead for. Like I firmly believe that. I think a lot of the metrics and statistics tell you that this season has probably been closer to aberration than what they really are. But they also look bad playing.
That's the point.
Sometimes. You
know, they look weak. They look disorganized. And Poch has a lot to do in the summer.
Bournemouth, JJ, I just want to touch on them quickly. They moved into the top 10. What a season. What a season. And this game, it's so fitting. A 3-0 win over Brighton over the weekend for Bournemouth. Really a tale of two mid-table teams whose seasons will be viewed vastly differently. Brighton have won 6 of their past 28 league fixtures. Good Lord. Meanwhile, this is from the BBC, Bournemouth, Areola's side, have taken 45 points from their past 26 games. If they could achieve that ratio over a full campaign, they'd be challenging for European places. And the thing that's interesting to me about Bournemouth and Areola specifically, doesn't it feel, JJ, like they're doing this without a squad filled with players that are going to get poached from all across, like, the big clubs?
Yeah, and like, it's interesting. The talk about Areola over this weekend was, well, if this was his second season with Bournemouth, he'd be up for the United job,
right?
He'd be up for the Liverpool job. He'd be up for whatever other job was going, because he's done such an excellent piece of work at Bournemouth.
Like Dominic Solanke, he might be in demand, but remember,
so
he's got 18 goals right now. His previous high in the Premier League was 6. So teams, before they fork over a ton of money for him, they might want to see him do it one more time.
Yes.
I think Justin Kluivert could be sought after. Alex Scott, who I've talked about, he's only 20. He might really be the one to keep an eye on here, who arrived there in the January window. But a lot of these guys, like, they're kind of like Ryan Christie, he's 29. Adam Smith actually turns 33 today. I check every day for when Adam Smith's birthday will be, and just so happens it's today. Lewis Cook is 27. Like, you know, they're not. It's not like it's a lot of guys between the ages of 19 to 23 that are going to get poached. And so the point of this is kind of twofold. Like, when Brighton or Southampton a number of years ago, like, when they're finishing high up in the table, you kind of looked at the squad and you're like, well, they're doing this with elite players that are going to be playing for top 6 sides next year. But I don't think we're saying that about Bournemouth. And like, the other part of that point is that it means they might look pretty similar next year. Like, it's like a mid-major college basketball team that's got all seniors that have been together for 4 years. They're cohesive. They know how to play together. They're experienced. And so then in March Madness, like, they go out and they shock some programs that have a bunch of one-and-done top-notch recruits. Like, I feel like, I don't know, if they can keep Areola, and they can keep Solanke, which are two big ifs, I feel like Bournemouth could be a lot of fun next year. I don't know what that means. I'm not saying they could sustain that 46 points over 25 games or whatever the ratio was. I don't know, but like, fun season, fun time ahead potentially for Bournemouth.
Yeah. Looking after the manager and keeping him there is going to be the challenge.
And I don't know who the natural, like, what would be the openings right now, potentially?
Well, Peter Schmeichel had things to say on BN Sport in Qatar with our friends Keezy and
Love when
Crazy.
We get a good Richard Keys mention into the show.
Yeah, have to get it in. It's amazing how relevant he's become again. He's just out there issuing missives on his blog and decrees from Qatar. So Schmeichel was pressed on a comment he made about how Tuchel was unlucky at Bayern Munich. He's a very good manager, did excellently at Chelsea. Because things went wrong at Chelsea doesn't mean X or Y. And he wouldn't comment and had a wry smile about the suggestion that Thomas Tuchel would be the next Manchester United manager. Thoughts, Andrew?
Well, he's such a... It's never clear-cut with Tuchel, is it? Like, there's so many things about watching his teams and sometimes over the course of a season where you're just like, I don't think this is it. And then he wins a Champions League. And you're like, well, I don't know anything anymore. And it might happen again this year with Bayern Munich. One of their most disappointing league campaigns in years. And they might win the effing Champions League. So I don't know. Maybe he can at least stabilize United, because there are a lot of things right now, but I don't know that stable environment is one of them. And I think Tuchel has shown he can come into like what he did at Chelsea. Maybe he can achieve some of that at United. If you're looking for, hey, we're going to be really fun again, I don't know. Like, if that's what you're hoping for out of a style of play, then I don't know that he'll bring that. But I don't know that that matters right now at United.
Yeah. The latest missive from Keys, his blog, published Monday, the 29th of April, 2024, hot off the Keezy presses. The headline, Andrew: Arne Ten Slot. He was the standout choice among a strong field of candidates. He set out a long-term vision to build a successful, exciting team. On the appointment of the Dutchman, the above was the sort of thing that was being said. Also, he was the manager most closely aligned with the identity and aims of the club, including a commitment to attacking football. There was also this, he showed passion, energy and enthusiasm for the challenge. Oh, and of course, it was mentioned he was a proven winner. The message to the fans was that they should show patience, as the new man said about building a successful team. The problem turned out to be that none of the above was true, and they're nothing to do with any, and they're nothing to do with anyone at Anfield yet. They're the words of John Murta, the former football director at Manchester United and the man responsible for appointing Erik ten Hag. Looking at them again now, it makes me wonder who exactly he was trying to persuade. Perhaps himself.
Mm.
So he goes on to draw comparisons between Ten Hag and Arne Slot. No, I mention it because I believe Liverpool are about to make the same mistakes that United did. Arne Ten Slot. Really? Not for me. And I'm not alone. There isn't a Liverpool fan that I've spoken to who isn't wholly underwhelmed by the news Ten Slot. He keeps calling him Ten Slot.
Aye, aye, aye.
To replace Klopp. Okay, let's cut him some slack. Except we don't know. It could turn out to be an inspired appointment. But I'm not convinced. So you can read the rest of Richard's thoughts.
I think
we've got the gist of it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Schmeichel kind of maybe dropping a hint about Tuchel to Old Trafford, which... unless everything else football-wise is sorted there, then I would question that one.
Okay.
Tuchel is a man who's not afraid to fire shots at the board when things aren't going his way.
Interesting. All right. And finally, JJ, we say goodbye to Sheffield United. Boy, I thought it was really disrespectful of Eddie Howe to be eating a sandwich when he went to shake Chris Wilder's hand at full time.
Yeah, and it was it was a Reuben. And it was one of those Reubens that, oh no, the bread's got wet and it's
like
falling
really
apart.
Messy coleslaw all over his hand.
Yeah, so bits were on Chris
sauerkraut.
Wilder's hand. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. Boy, Newcastle, they had a weird season. They're one of those teams where, like, and I've seen this firsthand with Tottenham, when they're on, forget it. So 8 times this year, they've scored 4 or more in a game, including the 8-0 that they had on Sheffield United the first time they played. That's right. In case you're counting, by the way, Sheffield United have conceded 13 goals against Newcastle this season. Single-handedly aiding their goal difference.
It could have been, I mean, Sheffield United took the lead.
That's true.
It really could have been 4-0 before the 20th minute to Sheffield United. The amount of chances they created was crazy. But back they go, Andrew.
Yeah.
Back to the championship where it's beginning to feel like that's really where they belong.
But there's still time for them to make history. So they've conceded 97 goals this season.
No.
I'm reading here from TalkSport. 97 goals. It means that Sheffield United could reach the unwanted landmark of 100 goals conceded. The first time it's been done in a 38-game Premier League season, Swindon reached a century of goals conceded in a 42-game campaign in the 93-94 season.
42 Premier League games. Wow. Man.
Yeah. Take that for all those too much football people out there.
Swindon is the benchmark.
Like, I always viewed, like, when Blackpool came up, like, I kind of always think of them as just like...
Derby were very bad one year.
Yeah. But Blackpool were really fun to watch. They just conceded a ton. A little bit of Luton there.
Yeah, but Blackpool,
but,
didn't
but
they?
But I don't know that Sheffield had been much fun.
Didn't Blackpool go down in their second season?
I thought it was it not one and done?
Was it?
I'd
didn't they get off to a crazy start where they were like fifth or something?
Well, like Charlie Adam, right? That was his year there when he was...
Animals, get in touch. When did Blackpool go down? Was it? I thought they stayed up the first season and then collapsed the second.
Well, we could vary. I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break. It's a perfect moment for us to go search that out, and we'll get back to you in mere moments. More Caught Offside still to come.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. But if you haven't checked already, animals and everyone out there listening, Blackpool were one and done. The 10-11 campaign was it. They went back down to the championship. Now they're in League One. So, yeah.
Remember Ian Holloway?
Yeah.
He gave good press conference. He always had something to say. Ollie.
Yeah. Let's see, JJ, a couple things here to close out. Before that, though, I have a story for you from the other night. Curious what you make of this.
Life story.
A life story. Just okay. Like, but how do you deal with this story? So in our town, it's really cool. I guess they take baseball very seriously here.
In Connecticut, sure.
I don't live in Connecticut.
Sorry.
I know. But so at the start of the Little League season, they have all the kids who are participating and playing.
Right.
Like, I don't know how, from all the age groups, it's like, I don't know, a couple hundred kids or something. And they all put on their uniforms and they march in a parade.
Cool.
And they have like a speaker come. Doc Gooden spoke. Right? Pretty cool.
Jeez. Yeah.
And so, but here's the problem. So that part of it, like,
they
something
closed
about
the streets,
like,
didn't they?
No. They did this at the fields.
Oh, okay.
But in the past, I haven't been at the past ones, but I think that they have done that before. But here's the, so like, it all sounds good. I love the communal feel of it. Like, I enjoy all that stuff.
Okay.
Like, I think that's cool.
What's the problem here?
So the first problem is they don't really gear it much towards the young kids. And so, yeah, Doc Gooden spoke. That's cool. But also speaking, we're like the mayor, the recreation guy, somebody who's being honored for having coached for a really long time, some other guy, that guy's kid. Like, so many speeches were made. And I'm watching a field of 5 through 10-year-olds and they're losing their minds. Like, they're just running around and they're yelling. There's a drone in the air. They're all screaming about the drone.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So that part is like a... But then it's what happened after that I wanted to ask you about. I've never had this happen to me before, and I'm wondering if it's ever happened to you. So there's a barbecue afterwards, mm-hmm. and everybody is immediately funneled from this where the speeches were made. Hey, everybody, go get your hamburgers and hot dogs over there off the side
Sounds
of the
good.
Field. And it's great. But now it's a really long line. And so I finally get to the front of it. Amanda said, hey, can you get me a hot dog too? I said, yeah, of course. So I get to the front. I say, hey, I'll take a cheeseburger, 2 hot dogs. And the girl says to me, oh, I'm sorry, we can only do 1 hot dog per person. And I get that. All right. It's a really long line. They're trying to make them as quickly as they can. They want to make sure everybody gets one. They don't want people hoarding.
Gotcha.
Fine with me. So I said to Amanda, here, take mine. I'll get another one when the line dies down. There's a guy next to me in line who hears me say that. And he goes, no. Get back in there. You get another hot dog. And I'm like, A, I'm thinking, who are you? But I say out loud, no, it's really okay.
Oh, no.
And he goes again. He's like, no. You get another hot dog. You tell him I told you could do it.
Oh, no. But who are you?
And, right? And I'm like, no, sir, it's really fine. And then he says a line to me. I did. He's an older gentleman.
Oh.
He then says a line to me that I've never heard before uttered to me in real life. He gives me the, do you know who I am?
What?
How do you? So I'm trying to be nice. How do you answer that question when the answer is no? So I just cringe every muscle in my face and I just go, no. And he goes, and he says to me, I'm one of the guys who made a speech tonight. Like, that's supposed to help in some way. So among the litany of speakers, I guess he was one of the people honored. He was feeling, he was really feeling himself in this moment. And I said, so after he said that, I was like, sir, it's really fine. I don't need the second hot dog. It's okay. And then he rolls his eyes and walks away. And Amanda watched the whole thing and we looked at each other like, Well, that's the weirdest thing that's happened to me in the last year.
That's so strange.
Right? What did he care? I think he was just feeling himself and he wanted to feel important. So I was the conduit for that. He's going to instill his influence on this town through me getting a second hot dog when no one else was allowed to.
When I won the junior baseball championships in 1987, I didn't know that my life would change quite so much. I guess he was being honored or something, and he was really just into it and felt
like the
waters part.
Do you know who I am? People really say that. I mean, I can now tell you that people, like, I've always heard people do, like, of that happening, but people don't actually say, "Do you know who I am?" I can tell you now, it's a line that people do say.
There's a thing about helping. Helping is great. But when you use helping to make yourself feel important, that's the problem. That's where helping crosses a line. You had only one other option there, was to go, "I know who you are. I got you." And then, "Can I have another hot dog, please?" But then you would have got into an argument with...
Yeah, let me just cut 300 people now. Okay, but he said I could. So?
So if he wasn't trying to feel important about himself, you know what he does? He goes up, he gets his hot dog, gives it to you.
Right.
That's how you do it. But it wasn't about that.
No.
It was about flexing his local community muscle. For 1 second.
Yes, yes.
That's what it was about.
Do you know who I am?
And you destroyed that moment for him.
But I tried to do it as kindly as possible. I wish somebody had a picture of my face, the way I said no when he asked, "Do you know who I am?" Because I wanted to say yes. Like, I wanted to be polite and not make him feel bad. But I didn't. No.
The worst possible answer. Worst possible answer.
I don't think he saw it coming. I think that was totally impossible to him.
Now I'm seeing you in all sorts of scenarios using no. Do you love me, Andrew? Huh?
No. Let's continue now. A few things before we close out on this pod. Bayer Leverkusen, they do it again. Like, this has just become stupid now. 46 matches unbeaten. They come from behind. But when I say it's become stupid, it's not just that they keep getting results. They were down 2-0. They got one back in the 61st, and then Robert Andrich equalizes in the 6th minute of stoppage time. They've scored 16 goals in stoppage time this season. And it feels like every one of them have been important. Like, this is crazy.
I thought there was a handball in the lead up to that. When Wirtz puts the ball into the box, it's headed and it comes back off. Now his arm is tucked in. It comes back of the Leverkusen number 3. I think it's because his arm is tucked in so tightly that it's not going to go against them. I'm watching it here again now. Ooh, flicked on. Yeah, definitely touches his arm, but it's his arm's tucked in, breaks, yeah. And then Andrich absolutely buries it, takes a deflection into the roof of the net. And they get pelted. I guess they celebrated where the VFB fans were, because there was a load of beer. Those cardboard beer things were thrown at them. Beer cups were thrown at them, so... awesome. They're just,
it's what a story. This story,
they're great.
They're great.
I hope people can handle when they're not that good next season.
including their CEO.
Oh dear.
So I saw this. Said? So this just kind of piqued my interest a little bit. Just something to remember down the road. This is from Leverkusen CEO Fernando Caro, looking ahead to next year in the Bundesliga. And he said, "I would say we should definitely be among the favorites. That's fine. We want to continue strengthening the team," Caro told Sky Germany. But he continues. He says, "I think Leipzig can be strong next year if they can keep players like Xavi Simons, Olmo, or Openda. I already expect Leipzig to be strong this year." Mm-hmm. "If I had to choose between Leipzig and Bayern, I would go with Leipzig," Caro explained. I just want to say to Fernando Caro, be careful. Just tread light. Don't poke the bear here. Bayern still have a lot of victorious muscle memory. They're in a Champions League semifinal right now. They're a destination club for a lot of top talent. Let's all just be careful here before we start anointing other teams, saying they're going to be better than Bayern and will be better.
Well, from my perspective as a champion,
Let's all just be careful. This has been an amazing season. So much fun. Let's bask in this for as long as possible. But before we start, like, really throwing dirt on Byron's grave, let's just be careful.
There's always a some suit to get involved and say something, yeah. Isn't there? Some guy who is not doing anything, not kicking a ball, he's going to interject. I totally agree with you on that one. By the way, Alonso's sideline attire. Kind of a cream, I suppose it's a grayish sweater, Andrew, navy chinos, and then, you know those Adidas sneakers you like? Those ones.
The Continentals?
Not the shell tops, the Continentals.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wearing a pair of them. Smart.
He's just got it going on.
He's quite thin. Like, thin as in he doesn't have his chest, just look at that. He doesn't have, like, his face is gaunt.
What?
He has no, there is, like, he looks like he's injured and...
You think he looks sickly?
No, not sickly. He's got that
gaunt and injured are other ways of saying sickly.
No, I mean, he looks injured in the sense that he looks like a guy that should be playing, like that he's still playing, and because he's very thin. And you can tell he's joining in the training sessions. He's in great shape. I just...
Well, our Leverkusen analysis always winds up here.
Well, I'm going through some things. The fact that... Look at Arne Slot's a bald Dutchman, right? He doesn't look good in chinos.
You don't need a male model to win, all right?
Wouldn't hurt.
Well, maybe.
Give us gals some eye candy.
Speaking of not poking the bear, just want to mention Harry Kane scored his 42nd goal in all competitions. That's a personal best for him. Also gives him 400 goals for club and country.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
What a story.
Yeah.
Let's see. MLS. Just want to bring it home for a couple seconds here, and then we'll get to JJ's things he saw on the internet. A couple things I wanted to note. We've spoken about this on previous podcasts, and it continues to play out week after week. We are seeing why LAFC was like, you're not going anywhere to Denny Bawanga. His winning goal the other night in stoppage time against Portland was just awesome, unless you're a Timbers fan. Perfectly placed, off the inside of the post, just a great goal. And I saw this quote from him on MLSsoccer.com. What a great quote. After the game, he said, "I hate to lose. I just want to win. I'm addicted to victory. I know if I can score in the 92nd minute, I'll do everything. I love to hear the fans chanting my name because, you see, I'm addicted to victory, and I love it too much to stay at a tie." He's got 6 goals in his last 6 games, back-to-back matches scoring an equalizing or winning goal in stoppage time. He's the bet that LAFC made that, like you said, he will not down tools. They've cashed in their bet. It's paid off quite well. And by the way, so it's interesting because, like, Bawanga wanted to go to France. LAFC said, no, you're not going to France. But how about we bring France to you?
Oh,
first it was Hugo Lloris.
Right.
And now it's pretty much, I think it's signed now that Olivier Giroud is going to be joining LAFC on a free transfer this summer.
I wonder how that fits with Bawanga's style of play. Like, how's that going to work? Are they going to be?
I bet it'll be great.
Yeah, are they going to be more direct, and then Bawanga's running off them?
Yeah,
running off him, that kind of thing.
I could see it.
Yeah, that could prove to be a lot of goals for them.
Yeah. Also, just want to note here in MLS, got to mention Messi, of course. It just continues to play out this, like, high level of expectation that there was for him, obscenely high, and he's. Pretty amazing that he is living up to it. 2 goals and an assist the other night in front of a record-setting attendance figure in for an MLS match at Gillette Stadium.
I mean, what did they get, 12, 15,000 usually?
They had 65, I think, for this one.
No, but they announced 20,000. I'm talking about games that aren't.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah, like on a normal night. Right, yeah. So you're saying that there's a low bar to breaking that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, but this is the impact he has in the league, you know.
Yeah. So. Messi in this game became the first player in MLS history to record multiple goal contributions in 5 consecutive games. Pretty impressive. And he's recorded the most goal contributions, 16, by any MLS player in the first 7 games of a season.
I'm just thinking about not about Messi for 1 second, because yes, Messi.
Impossible.
Well, in this league, they won't let you think about anything else. But Drake Callender on the first goal. I mean, it's an excellent finish, but where is he going? The more I see this guy, Andrew, I'm thinking he ain't it. He's slipping down JJ's pecking order, yeah. And I am promoting Schulte.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then one other MLS note I wanted to make here. If you, Real Salt Lake had gotten off to a really good start, but you know, they've kind of spent a bunch of years sort of toiling in mediocrity. So if you weren't sure, if you wanted to kind of take the plunge on Real Salt Lake, how do you feel now? They go across the country. They give Philadelphia their first loss of the season. They've got what looks to be an MVP candidate in Chicho Arango. He's been amazing. Had an assist for Andres Gomez's opening goal. The goal that the winning goal in the 89th minute from Alexandros Katranis, ridiculous. Felt like that ball was in the air or just I don't know. Should Andre Blake have gotten to that? Part of me is kind of wonder a little bit. Like that ball, it wasn't smashed. It was perfectly placed. I'll give him that. It's a great goal. It was a great goal. But yeah, so there's Real Salt Lake now. They're shooting up the charts. They're tied, I believe, with LAFC atop the Western Conference. So we'll see. It's still relatively early, but it's a decent sample size. And like I said, they've looked really good. They've got an MVP candidate, and then now they have a signature win to go with it. So let's see. This could be, you know, every year there's kind of some surprising team at the top of the standings. Maybe them. We'll have to wait and see. JJ, you want to tell us about some things you saw on the internet?
I'll check the web.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to present to you the internet.
I went on the internet this week.
Oh God.
And I found this.
What did you find?
Ah, oh, that's it's your best work. It's simply your best work.
Wow.
Best one you've ever done. Let's begin with something I omitted from last week. I just sometimes stuff slips off my rundown because I don't put it directly into the rundown. I have it on a note. I missed this belter. This is John Terry. And he's talking on a podcast and he's discussing a story which I think in his brain he believes makes him sound good. I'm going to let you be the judge, Andrew. Here's John Terry's airplane story.
So when ABB come in, we went to Hong Kong, I think, and I'm sitting in economy on a 13-hour flight. And we've got Josh McEachran, Nathaniel Chalobah, a couple of other young players, all in first class. And this was part of ABB's going, no player's bigger than me.
Right.
Everyone's the same. So I'm going on the plane going, no, we're not going anywhere until these young players go back in economy and the first team players that have built this club to where we are today go back in first. AVB comes up. What's the problem? I'm going, well, we're not going anywhere until the young players move. And to be fair to the young players, they're going, this JT is really uncomfortable. We'll go back. And I'm going, no, it's not your decision. Has to come from, he has to own it. In the end, it spins. So all first team players fly first. Younger players go back economy. And he tried to make a statement
make
day
point,
one.
Yeah.
And he fouled instantly.
Right.
Because I promise you, the plane wasn't going. And if it was going, it would have gone without myself, Frank and Didier.
That was John Terry on Upfront with Simon Jordan, which is a rich repository of people who are not very self-aware saying things, basically. Andrew. That story, as JT is telling that story, it does feel like he thinks, this is a good story for me, but it is not a good story for him.
It's so interesting. So I didn't know what you just sent me the audio. You just said, hey, I'm going to play this and things we should do on the internet. Have this ready. You didn't tell me anything about your take.
Nothing.
I had no idea what your stance was going to be. You're a PFM, so I kind of thought maybe you would side with Terry. But when I heard it, it ended and I sat there for a second. I was kind of like, are we sure you're the hero in this story?
And it's a funny bit where Chalobah or whoever it is like, oh, JT, no, we'll move. This is making me, this is uncomfortable. No. Yeah, you've made it uncomfortable.
Yeah.
AVB has made a decision. By the way, I'll start the criticism with AVB. You're not getting the point. Like, did you not call Jose Mourinho and ask about the alpha dogs in this club? Because if you had just made a quick phone call, you would have realized this is not the decision to make with these guys.
Right.
Don't do that. Also, Terry trying to position it as at the start, what he was trying to say was like, everybody's equal. No one's bigger than me, the manager. No.
Right.
He's trying to say every player is equal, right?
Right.
And you've taken an affront to that. Rather than just sitting in economy and letting him have his moment and then discussing it afterwards, you've created a scene where you won't let a plane fly.
Right. Like, he's brought the FAA into it.
Like,
we're going to stall all air traffic until this situation gets sorted.
What is the matter with you?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I forget where I heard that. Was it Clint Dempsey? There was somebody I was listening to recently that was talking about how they really liked AVB. I can't remember who it was now.
Yeah. AVB's been appointed, president of Porto or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently is a huge thing for him.
Yeah.
And he's young enough to be young manager of the year if he went back to England. Like, he was a bewildered child when he took over at Chelsea, and even more bewildered when he rocked up to White Hart Lane.
Yeah, although I didn't hate that year. It's Gareth Bale, obviously. I mean, it's hard to judge anything because Bale was just...
Yeah.
It's the most on another planet I think I've seen a player. Like, where just like every time he touched the ball, I was like, oh my God, what am I witnessing here? So it's almost hard to judge stuff that happened, but like, but AVB, yeah, I don't know. There were some like weird, kind of sneaky, fun moments in that year and a half. But yeah, anyway.
But there's John Terry, as ever, self-aware, a man who will be suspended for a final and change into a tracksuit. Like, it just goes to show you the difference in character. When Scholes and Keane knew they were out, wouldn't be playing in the 1999 Champions League final, they went on the beer all afternoon and they went on the field in their club suits, right? Harry tries to get into the shots as if he's been playing all the time. It's, he went full kit. Crazy. Inter had their celebrations. We know they were crowned champions, or effectively champions last week, but they were officially crowned this week. And they had the most amazing open top bus ride through the city center of Milan. And, you know, you can only imagine what the scenes were like. But then at night, they were in, I guess, the main plaza or concourse, and intertweeted this out from their official account. They were all, I guess, holding up their cell phones and singing to create this light show. We just have a listen to it. A lot of Italian lungs, and it's kind of amazing. quite amazing. I'm laughing because there's always something. Someone always loses the run of themselves. You know, it's either Jack Grealish, who goes on the beer for 6 weeks after, or winning a treble, or it's Denzel Dumfries, who now has to apologize over his Theo Hernandez error of judgment.
Oh, no.
He took this massive banner that a fan sent of him. It's him superimposed onto a guy holding a baseball bat with a chain for what a Doberman, and the Doberman on the end of the chain, the Doberman's head has been replaced by the head of Theo Hernandez. Inter, this is from Italian, the excellent footballitalia.net. Inter winger Denzel Dumfries has apologized for an error of judgment in holding up an insulting banner depicting Milan star Theo Hernandez. It was not smart at all, quotes. It probably will not be enough to avoid a hefty fine, and he could even receive a suspension.
Wait, what? Hold on.
Yeah, a fine and a suspension for violating the code of conduct with the banner. Now, is this Inter's code of conduct or Serie A's code of conduct?
Is this that? Am I missing something? Is this that bad?
It's depicting...
Like, it's kind of... Yeah, it's insulting of a rival player, but...
Yeah.
You get suspended for that?
I mean, you can get charged with in England with bringing the game into disrepute, so I don't see why this wouldn't fall under that law here. Yeah, this is from Dumfries.
Seems kind of harsh. Unless I'm missing something, are there, like, other connotations to this that I'm not picking up on? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, you can take... first of all... The original drawing looks like it's from Los Angeles, because you can see a palm tree in the background. He's outside a liquor store. He's wearing cargo shorts and a tank top. Yeah, I mean, it's saying a lot of insulting. Comparing someone to a dog is never good. You know, the connotations are, there's many of them. I don't need to go into all of them, Andrew. It is pretty insulting.
All right.
Although I do like Dobermans. There's a very friendly one in our neighborhood I wish to befriend. Yesterday was the most beautiful day for me, all the players and everyone at the club. Thank you so much to the fans who turned out in their thousands at the parade. It was a great feeling to celebrate with all of you. It meant so much to the team, Dumfries wrote. During the parade, I held up a banner that displayed an inappropriate image. I'm a player who loves rivalry in football. It is a crucial part of any game. I realize now that holding up the banner was an error of judgment on my part and not smart at all. Let's move on to focusing on what's been the most amazing season for Inter Milan. Thank you once again for all your support this season and for the celebrations yesterday. I will never forget them. It's not like he was like, oh, some fan handed it to him. He brought it with him and he held it up. So, yeah, there we go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You see anything else on the internet?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
don't try and rush me. All right. Miguel Delaney, he tweeted this out amongst other journalists who have. Premier League clubs have voted for a new spending cap where expenditure is anchored to the lowest broadcast income earned by a club. Uh-huh. Some strange alliances that show how complicated these discussions are. Man United, City and Villa voted against it. Chelsea abstained. Huh. Now, I can see why City and United would vote against it, because they're... United are probably going to attempt a very lavish rebuild under a new manager. Curbing their spending is not going to be good. And City are just, well, we know. City will just have to make up more sponsorships. Abu Dhabi cookies have come in to sponsor us. Abu Dhabi cookies. They're nothing to do with the royal family. Nope. But anyway, listen. So at the time we went to record, I couldn't get any very clear detail on what this meant. But so expenditure is anchored to the lowest broadcasting income earned by a club. So are we saying that the broadcast revenues income for the bottom side is like, I'd say between $120 and $140 million. So is that's the cap for everyone? The lowest broadcasting income. So that'd be whatever the bottom club earns is what you can spend. And across how many years? Is it across one transfer window, which would be, that wouldn't be much of a curb if you're spending 150 million in a window, or would it be across, you know, is it like across some years? The detail was not there, but It's essentially a spending cap. Andrew, thoughts?
Yeah, I'm trying to, as you're talking about it, because I had not seen this. This is a story from the AP just 1 hour ago. So while we were recording, they put this out there. So I'm kind of just trying to read it and get my head around it as you're explaining it. The current rules allow clubs to lose a maximum of 105 million pounds over a 3-year period. What I can't figure out is if it says here, the system would limit or anchor the spending. Did you just say this? By all clubs to a multiple of the combined prize money and cash from TV rights earned by the last place team in the league.
Yeah. I mean, again, when we started recording this, this was expenditure is anchored to the lowest broadcasting income earned by a club. So I guess that would include, maybe they're including prize money in that as well.
I'm going to have to read more on this. It feels like that feels significant to me in terms of how much less now teams will be able to spend.
Yes.
But I don't know. I need more on this. I apologize. I don't have a take yet.
So Barons.com, they said, the Athletic reported the anchoring plan will be capped at 5 times the lowest earning side receives via the Premier League's broadcast deals. Capped at 5 times the lowest earning. Official figures for last season show the bottom club, Southampton, were paid £104 million sterling. That's $130 million in TV money. The Times said the clubs are expected to be sure that any cap would not cause any of them to reduce spending from their present levels. What the? Okay. The plan received at least the 14 votes necessary from 20 clubs. We need more detail on this, but...
Interesting. All right.
It's an interesting thing. And finally...
Oh my God.
One more. So I want you to play this music. This is the music from ITV's coverage of the Mexico 86 World Cup. And I have a question to ask afterwards. Have a listen to this jaunty number. This one's for the animals, Andrew, and maybe we can do it on Reddit or on Twitter or wherever. That music is just so nostalgic to me. Now, I don't remember Mexico 86, but I know ITV kept using that music as they went forward with their football coverage. And there's just so many soccer-related music, stuff that's tied directly to soccer. Like anyone who played FIFA, I think it's FIFA 98, they'll remember Chumbawamba, you know? I get knocked down, but I get up again. That's like associated with soccer too. And I'm just wondering if the animals have more songs or music that they associate with soccer on TV or whatever. Because I'm curious to hear. I've got so much like seared into my brain.
Interesting. Submit them. Maybe Please. We'll try to sprinkle them in.
Yeah, the Reddit is r/CaughtOffsidePod.
There you go. And of course, you can always get us on Twitter at @CoSoccerPod, at JJ Devaney, at @AGunling, wherever. JJ, that's about all I got. That was a very good edition of things you saw on the internet. I enjoyed that, especially the John Terry thing.
John Terry is who we thought he was.
That's about it. That's about it. We'll be back later this week as the first legs of the Champions League semifinals are going to be happening on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we will have, of course, a lot to say about how those are shaping up. It should be a lot of fun. And then also, we got to figure out when exactly we'll be recording on Thursday, JJ, because I think there is also, I don't know if we need to wait for Tottenham Chelsea, but I think that's also on Thursday. I don't know. I'll defer to you. I'll defer to you on that.
I mean, I defer to the fans. Does a early Friday morning podcast drop work for them?
Hmm.
That's
right.
The question.
A little bit of crowdsourcing.
It's an island on its own, May 2nd, which is very close to your birthday, sir.
Yeah. Not only is it close, it is.
Indeed.
In fact.
That's why I said close.
Yeah. I'm sure that's why. Hey, this was a joy. We'll be back with another one later this week. Hey, JJ, to you I say...
Check you later, phone boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.